Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The race is on, and the season gets ever closer with the first day of the second pre-season test already in the books. We've seen a lot more miles, heard a lot more from the drivers and other key players, but are we any wiser? The teams will certainly hope they are, but with two more days remaining, although we haven't seen anyone lay their cards on the table to really show what they can do, the picture is gradually becoming a little clearer. I'm Ed Straw, and joining me is Gary Anderson to try and make some sense of it all. So Gary, Alfa Romeo's fastest will win the World Championship. Fact.
Robert Kubica was fastest in the Alfa Romeo, which is it's nice to see, to be honest. He had a tough comeback last year with Williams. So although it's probably a little bit of a glory run, and it's probably the last time he'll drive this weekend or this testing. So, you know, it's nice to see it. I don't think it's all really true, to be honest. But yeah, they've come with a new front wing for the car. We've done an article about it, so you can go and read about it there. But it's
a very interesting piece, and you're not totally convinced by their direction.
No. It wouldn't have been the direction I would have taken to try to have alleviated what I think their problem is, which is the sensitivity between fast corners and low-speed corners. I don't think they'll gain the low-speed grip the way they've done it. I think they'll probably end up getting the car will be a little bit more pitch-sensitive. So it's a circle of events. Maybe they needed to do that to realise their problem, but you know, we'll keep an eye on it and see if anything changes there. And we also saw a new diffuser for the McLaren, which we again have done an article on. So, you know, there are developments coming through, a lot of small bits and pieces. Williams have got a modified front wing, I'd call it more than a new front wing, exploiting the regulations a little bit, which again we've done an article on. So it's all there. Does it improve the car? You know, there's still questions over the lap times that most teams are doing before we really know where we're at.
Yeah, well, as Gary says, there's plenty to read on the website. Three stories on the McLaren, the Alfa, and the Williams in terms of new parts. It's interesting, actually. Alfa Romeo, I tried to go along to Alfa's little press gathering at the end of the day when a few of us could have spoken to Kimi, but we waited for about 20 minutes, and then the team PR said, "Oh no, he's not coming." So I presume he was wedged in a debrief, and there was a bit of head scratching going on. That's normally a bit of a questionable sign, but I think we've probably seen something approaching what the Alfa Romeo can do. Maybe not absolute flat-out qualifying, but they've set some quick times both last test and this test. So
they've definitely been trying, because they've been going to the very soft tyre, the C5. So, you know, you don't do that if you're not going to give it a bit of a fling. And if you get high fuel with a C5 tyre around Barcelona, you'll just kill them dead. So, no, I don't think they're running, you know, obviously the, as I keep calling it, the sniff of an oily rag, that low, but they're not in excess of fuel whenever they're trying for their times.
Well, let's look up at the front. It was another day of pounding round, looking very ominous for Mercedes. Obviously, their fastest lap time was nothing particularly special. Lewis Hamilton was seventh fastest, 0.6 off the pace. And we should add that nobody's hit the time that the Mercedes set in the last test yet in this one. So overall times are kind of by the by. But just, yeah, 89 laps for Hamilton, 90 laps for Bottas. Just metronomically, bang, 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 nothing going wrong. The car looks quick in all conditions. You'd be pretty happy if you were sat in the Mercedes truck right now crunching the numbers, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that's an equivalent of sort of three plus race distances, I think, in one day between the two drivers. And, you know, that's what it's all about. Firing the car up in the morning and switching it off at lunchtime, firing it up after lunch and switching it off at night. If you can do that, then, you know, you're getting yourself, you know, into a state where you've got confidence and that sort of thing going into the race. You don't want to be taking many gambles when you do get to Melbourne. You just want to pound the miles in, make sure the temperatures stay all right, and you know, that bit of wire isn't going to get burned, all that sort of stuff. So they are doing their homework very, very well. They have done some race runs, which I'll get a bit more analytical with tomorrow, see what we can pick out of there. The one they did on the last day of the last test was pretty impressive. So we'll just see how they've stacked up with doing, you know, maybe doing another couple. So, yeah, I mean, that's the objective for this testing, is to get as much knowledge of the car as you can. Obviously, you want to stop sometimes and do a little bit of setup change here and there. And the setup change in these cars isn't a quick thing to do, because all the rear suspensions inside the sort of bell housing, the gearbox, very, very complicated to get to. You can get to the front suspension fairly easily, but some of these setup changes does take a bit of time. And I think, you know, one of the things we should say about Mercedes, they really have pushed the rear suspension members, you know, as far as what they're trying to do with the rear suspension to try and improve the diffuser downforce. Haven't really gotten top of it yet, but we've got some good pictures today, so I'm going to try and do a bit of a feature tomorrow on it and how they might have tried to achieve it. And it does sort of take away one of the legs of the bottom wishbone, so there's a bit missing, if you know what I mean. But you still got to do all the same work, so I'll have a look tomorrow and try and come up with a reason and how they achieved it.
But overall, you know, Mercedes, if you're Ferrari or Red Bull, you'd be looking at them thinking, you know, that's a hell of a moving target, isn't it? They've worked on every aspect of the car, on the engine side. You know, we know it's a little bit more compact. They found power. They can run it a little bit higher temperatures. It's just that everything just pushed to that next step. And although there's no, I mean, dual axis steering aside, there's nothing kind of magic they've done. It's just like doing everything even more brilliantly than before.
Yeah, I mean, if you take the cooling against the downforce level, the more you have to cool the car, the less airflow you have to create downforce with. So, you know, as a rule of thumb from way back in the old days, you know, if you had to cool the car by 5 degrees, you end up losing about 2% of the downforce. So you want to make sure you're covered there. And the Mercedes engine department have done a very, very good job in allowing the engine to run a little bit hotter, making sure the materials and stuff were correct, and obviously the lubricants from their lubricant supplier has to go with that. And if you can do that, and actually with the engine themselves, the engine generates a certain amount of power, X amount of it goes out the end of the crankshaft, and the rest of it's turned into heat. And they've always pushed very hard to reduce that excess that's going into heat. And if you can do that, it's basically reducing friction. You reduce the heat the engine's generating, and then you get more out the end of the crank as well. So it's a double whammy. You get a little bit more power, less heat's being put into the radiators, less cooling required, more downforce. So you got a bit more power and a bit more downforce. So it's a good way to go. And you don't use any more fuel, because it's just doing away with the bad bits as opposed to having to put more fuel in to get more power.
Well, and talking of heat, the heat is on at Ferrari. Lots of talk about them. We still haven't seen anything in terms of extreme pace from them. There was a little bit of fun with team principal Mattia Binotto saying that the Mercedes suggestion that they'd made a few days ago, they were running their engine dialed back compared to the customers. He said that wasn't correct. So what do you make of where Ferrari are? Have you got a bit more of a feel for them?
Well, it's difficult because, you know, the difference in Ferrari to Mercedes is basically 1.68 seconds. Now, you know, if that was just a fuel load, it's 50 kilograms of fuel. Now, Mercedes are not running their car light. I'm expecting something like a 14.5, 14.7 maybe from this test, whenever somebody does try to do a lap time or in that region, looking into the 14s. So, you know, that's... If you take that again against what Mercedes have done, you know, they've got fuel in their car. So, and then look deeper a little bit at it. You know, if you look at Mercedes, if you look at Red Bull, if you look at Racing Point, if you look at Renault, you know, the team's sort of body language is, you know, it's just that they've got their shoulders up. They're on a mission. They're doing something. If you look at Ferrari's, it isn't. You know, none of the team, from the drivers to Matteo Binotto or anybody, you know, they're not, you know, they don't look to me like they're just ready for battle. They're a bit shy of it all. So we'll have to see. Obviously, you know, they're not down where we think, you know, where we show them at the moment, but we can do no more than take the times, as we've done for everybody, and say this is the time that I think you would do if you're on the C3 tire. Actually, Vettel was on the C3 tire today and did an 18.11 on that actual tire. So it's difficult to know. I don't know. And I'm sure they're as confused as anything. They're apparently they got some new bits here. I haven't really seen them yet. New front wing. So maybe they've got this super slender nose and front wing just arriving tonight, and they'll be bolted on tomorrow, but we'll just have to wait and see.
We saw the new rear wing with just the slightly different, the sort of curved profile at the bottom of it. So that seemed to be on, certainly in the morning it was on quite a lot. I didn't see so much in the afternoon of that, but so there's bits and pieces turning up.
Well, there is. I mean, the rear wing is a sort of it's a standalone item. It's a variable that you'll have, for, you know, probably got 10 of them or something in their catalogue of rear wings ready for different circuits anyway. So I wouldn't classify the rear wing as a major development thing. It's just a wing that maybe just offers that little bit more efficiency for the downforce levels you're running. And that's why, you know, you'll see it from Montreal to Monza to Monaco to Spa, variations in wing. And as I say, I don't get excited about rear wings as far as the details concerned relative to developments. And rear wing end plates and stuff like that, yes, you know, they're more important. They are car parts. The rear wing is an adjustable part.
Well, you mentioned your kind of performance ranking. Is it worth quickly running through that there? You've got your numbers at the ready. This is, of course, covering this is kind of a peak pace that you have evidence for, shall we say, across the 4 days of testing so far.
Yeah, all I've used is, I mean, there's five different tyres here, and I've come up with looking at the cars and during last season and during this test and the sort of delta between compounds to try to make sure that I cover the fact that if somebody does all the running on a different tire from somebody else. So I've sort of equated that back to the C3 tire, which I think in the end of the day we'll probably see most lap times by the end of this test done on the C4 tire. And when that happens, I'll sort of convert to the biggest percentage, basically, whoever tires run as the biggest percentage of the 10 teams it's running. But at the minute, it's the C3 tire. And we have Mercedes from the last test with a 16.432, Red Bull from the last test with a 17.135, Racing Point from the last test with a 17.347, Renault from the last test with a 17.373, they were the top four at the last test. I'm using the same times because if you've done it and the track isn't that much different, you know, if we see a big difference in times from one day to the next day, we'll sort of discount it because it's, you know, the track's changed a lot, but it has to be everybody's done a much slower time. So then we got AlphaTauri. They were fifth at the last test. They've gone a little bit quicker, and they've done a 17.456, but they're still fifth. And then Alfa Romeo have popped up from seventh to sixth, and they've done a 17.642. McLaren have gone from 6th to 7th, and again, it was the first test, they've did a 17.774. Ferrari have gone from 9th to 8th, they have done an 18.113, the first test is an 18.289, so, you know, they found 0.17 of a second. You know, it's difficult to see. That's not much as far as relative terms. That's, you know, it's 5 kilograms of fuel difference, or, you know, a very, very small amount of engine difference. We got Williams, who've dropped from 8th to 9th. They've got the same time from the first test, 78.168, or an 18.168, sorry. And then Haas is languishing at the back end, 10th at the minute at both tests with an 18.380. So, you know, the average sort of lap time from the first test was a 17.641. The average lap time from this test is 17.582. So there's no big difference there. I don't think the track's really that bad. People were complaining about the wind today, but, you know, some cars get affected by the wind and some cars don't get affected by the wind. So it's an interesting thing to see who really is complaining about it. You have to race in the wind. Some places are windier than others, but you need to just get on with the job and then find out what the difference in the car is going to be for the wind. And so you can accommodate it whenever, you know, push comes to shove at a race meeting.
Well, you've got Red Bull second in that ranking. We saw Red Bull have a few little problems today. They were a bit delayed in the morning with a rear suspension problem. Then right at the end of the day, Verstappen had an off. That was just at the run out of fuel at an inconvenient moment, shall we say. So that would have been an out of fuel run for him. But a little bit of lost track time for Red Bull, and we still haven't quite seen that extreme pace that we kind of have a feeling might be somewhere in the car, but still that step behind.
Yeah, there's still that step behind, although I still have to say, you know, the body language at Red Bull is pretty strong. Are they going to challenge Mercedes? It's probably doubtful, but are they going to be close to Mercedes? I think so. you know, you have to consider that the last four races of last season, Red Bull were the quickest car. If you did take the average average percentage from the four races, they were the fastest car, Mercedes second and Ferrari third. So they want to continue from where they left off. At the minute, I've got them 7/10 slower than Mercedes. That's worse than last year, to be honest, by a long shot. The end of the season, that 7/10 around here would become a second, really, a 1%, sorry. And last year they ended up 0.1% of, you know, ahead of Mercedes. So at the minute they're not doing as well as they did last year. Is that because Mercedes are doing a lot better? You know, you don't know until you really one of them sort of runs the gauntlet and throws in the lap time. And hopefully one of them will, but what day it'll be, Thursday or Friday this week, I'm not sure.
There's a very, very, very slight sense of familiarity growing, isn't there, with Mercedes at the front and Red Bull not quite able to carry the momentum over from the previous season. They have said they've tried to change that this year, and like you say, we have got a lot more to see over the next 2 days. So I'm hoping we can see some more from Red Bull, because it would be great if they were in their pushing. Same with Ferrari as well. Obviously, Racing Point has been that big talking point. We've spoken before on the podcast about the pink Mercedes thing. In fact, we had a chat with Andrew Green, the technical director, obviously worked with you back in Jordan days, about how that whole process has been undertaken and how it's quite difficult to kind of copy, as it were, a car and then understand it and evolve it. But that car is good. Sergio Perez was talking at the end of today. He said this is basically the strongest they've been at the start of a season, the most solid package his career at any stage. So that there's this kind of feeling that this Racing Point car could start the season at least very, very strongly.
No, I agree. And what Andrew was saying was genuine. It's the way I think as well. You know, they pursued their own concept for many years, and basically they went to the high rear ride height and all that sort of stuff. And they did everything correctly, because they evolved their car and they made it better within its own concept. And what they decided to do this year was to take millions of pictures of the Mercedes, last year's Mercedes, and then really sort of buy into the fact that this car has just won the world championship. It's got a Mercedes engine in it that they're using. It's got a Mercedes gearbox on it that they're using. They're now also using the front and rear uprights from the Mercedes. So they're sort of tied into Mercedes. So they decided, right, let's take the next step. Model all up as best we can to see how it performs. And initially, it was terrible, way down in downforce from their original car. But they decided to buy into that fact and just keep on developing now what they had sort of created of a Mercedes B car, I suppose you might call it. And as the development started to pay dividends, they sort of tried to understand why their car to this car, why this car worked and won the world championship, and their car, you know, wasn't as fast. And they did discover that basically the aerodynamic package on the car was much more benign. It wasn't peaky downforce. It was much more driver friendly, all that sort of stuff. And that's the sort of stuff that I 100% agree with. You know, you've got to give the driver confidence, and giving the driver confidence, because the downforce hangs around. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't come and go that you get with the peakiness. Is a massive, massive thing. I think both drivers say that now. So I think they're in the right direction. If I was looking at the car right now, I'd say it looks very like a Mercedes from last year. But that's what they've done. You know, they didn't want to sort of get halfway there and say, oh, look, if we change this bit to our way of thinking, look, we get, you know, 10 points of downforce or whatever. They stuck with what you see on the Mercedes. And obviously making profile, wing profiles and all that sort of stuff is very, very difficult. But all you can do is take a genuine component that you can measure, draw from pictures, and then you try and optimize that component, as opposed to changing route, changing direction completely. And I think what they've done, you know, as a past technical director, I wouldn't like to have done it, because you're sort of admitting that, you know, somebody out there is cleverer than you. And it's nice to come up with your own ideas. But it's the last year of these regulations. So they wanted to find a different direction, because it will allow them, the regulation is changing for next year, for 2021, but allow them to take that direction and sort of encompass it into next year's car, the characteristics, I suppose you might call it. because they've got their old car and its characteristics. They've got this new car and its characteristics. Somewhere in between there is probably the real thing. But at least they're going to have experience of it. So it'll help them for the future, even though the regulations are changing.
And again, it's still looking like the midfield's going to be interesting. AlphaTauri, we haven't spoken about a great deal. They've been relatively consistent in kind of where they are and where they're lapping. They look like they have got quite a tidy package there, don't they? They should probably be relatively content with where they are. Both Daniel Kvyat and Pierre Gasly today were saying they were sort of pretty happy with things. They had the air of drivers that knew they had something under them that they can do something with. They're working through all the setup parameters, etc. The car was doing what they thought it would, so it felt like quite a tidy step.
Yeah, I mean, I keep talking this body language, and Kvyat's not, I don't think he ever smiles really, does he? But yeah, again, they're another team that's, you know, the shoulders are high, they're bouncing around a bit. And I think that's right, because, you know, they've gone from being a team that's bringing in juniors every year. They had a new driver for a long time. They've now got two drivers that have been through the Red Bull cycle. They've been to Red Bull. They've driven for the works team. They know the pressures that's demanded of them from the works team. And that pressure isn't any different for them at AlphaTauri. It's just not pressed onto them so much. So they can relax a little bit more, but they still know that they need to perform. And I think this is their best chance to have a really good season with the two drivers they've got. And it really is because the drivers are, you know, they are top-line drivers. They both stood on the podium. And, you know, at the end of the day, they've got the same engine. They've got a good relationship with Red Bull. Interesting thing for me is that their, you know, their front wing philosophy, again, Red Bull to AlphaTauri, doesn't follow the same thought pattern at all. So I've always waited for last year and now into this year for them to sort of join up somewhere and see who went to what direction. And I still think there's a better compromise in there. But, you know, obviously it changes the rest of the car how it works. So they have to do their own car aerodynamically. And they do that. And it's nice to see that they do that. And they end up with their own route on the front wing.
Yeah, it's not just a 2019 Red Bull by any stretch of imagination. Some bits are, and they do their own aero program. In fact, we run a story on the race.com about them considering moving in to share the Red Bull wind tunnel, because next year the occupancy rules that have come in for 2021 are much more restrictive. So actually two teams can share the same wind tunnel that the Red Bull Bedford wind tunnel would be without any big problems. So that would allow AlphaTauri to move up from 50% scale to the maximum permitted 60% scale. They're the only ones at 50% at the moment.
Yeah, they are the only ones at 50%. Now, moving to 60% doesn't sound like much, but it is a lot bigger model, higher loads on all the components. So suddenly, you can't go and tape on little bits of cardboard or anything. So you have to really make everything that has to fasten correctly. The thing as well that is quite interesting is that, you know, the bigger the model, the bigger the tunnel needs to be. So there is a bit of a benefit from having a 50% model. As long as you understand it and know its shortcomings, the tunnel itself isn't so critical. When you talk about these cars having outwash, I mean, a 50% model is, a meter across. These cars are 2 meters over the outside of the wheels, as far as I think I'm correct there. 2 meters across the outside of the wheels. So a 50% model's 1 meter across the outside of the wheels. And to be honest, with this outwash that we used to have and still have, to be honest, around the front tyres, you know, you need the walls of the wind tunnel need to be another meter away from you to not be affected and not change the pressure and the flow outside around the wheels. So going to a 60% model, you know, that problem just compounds. Your tunnel's got to be bigger again. So there's an area there to say at the moment with what they've got, they understand it, they understand its shortcomings, they can do okay. Changing to the 60% model will be a massively expensive venture, and will it pay rewards whenever really next year's regulations, it's all about doing away with downforce producing devices and trick stuff. It's all much more simple. I'd nearly say to just stick with what you got and next year will come towards you, as opposed to you needing to get, you know, the bigger model.
Well, and that's why AlphaTauri is only considering it at this stage. I need to make sure it's obviously all the model making capacity, etc. Because what you can't do is just stick a 50% model in that 60% tunnel and take advantage of the extra space, because all the way it's mounted, etc. It's set up for 60% models. And actually, coming back to what Andrew Green was saying about Racing Point, they had to make sure before they did this copy, because they were going to do so many iterations when they started that process. I think it said last June they really started working on it. They had to have the production resource to make the parts and the model parts to put through every few weeks. So you have new steps. So it's serious business, the wind tunnels. Before we wrap up, we should perhaps mention McLaren. I'm trying to pick on some of the teams we haven't spoken about so much. They've said they're keeping quite a low profile in terms of there'll be upgrades coming in Melbourne, so which be perhaps expected that they're not setting the world alight with the overall lap times in the midfield. They seem to be relatively confident. You were happy with the floor upgrade. That while the Alpha one you didn't think made sense, the McLaren one did make sense, and there's some great picks that you've had illustrated on the website on therace.com that kind of show where the changes are, and you can see with the Flovis why they might do that.
Yeah, you can. There is a bit of a sort of caveat there that I'd like to sort of add in, and I put it on the article. You know, the volume of the diffuser at the back is really what makes it work, and you can be very sympathetic with the flow, but you don't get the downforce out of it. You get the consistency out of it. There's other areas of the diffuser that affect that little bit that I've highlighted that's probably suffering from airflow separation. I'm not so sure they'll get the downforce that they need out of that new floor. They'll get the consistency out of it, but getting the actual numbers high enough. So I would have maybe pursued a little bit of a different avenue to try to have fixed that problem and kept the volume at the back of the diffuser as big as possible the minute they've given some up. So it's a chicken and egg. You know, I don't know how big their problem is. I don't know what the problem is they're trying to fix other than getting good airflow there. Which it looks as though they've achieved, and I would expect that they've achieved it because they've made the diffuser area less aggressive. Less aggressive means less downforce, but it will mean more stable downforce. So we'll wait and see.
But as a wise man has told me many times over the past decade or more, the consistency is the key, because you can only drive to the troughs, not the peaks, as it were, for the driver.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. But you know, whenever I take good cars that we've had, they've always been cars that had consistent downforce. But they weren't cars that won races, if you know what I mean. They were cars that were competitive. We needed help to win a race from the others having problems. So there's a fine line between a car that's you're able to trap in a certain position, that's the aeromap from underneath, from the car basically around the track, with all the different ride heights it goes through, all the different scenarios of roll, yaw, steering, and the aeromap you create from that. The more stable you can have that, the better for sure. But you don't want to give up good downforce. You've got to let the car move to a certain level to give the driver feedback. And if you sort of don't allow the car to move to that level, and you trap the car sort of stiff springs and, you know, all that sort of stuff to stop the car moving, really, the driver will hate it. So there's a certain amount of movement you need to allow into the car to give the driver confidence, and then you need your downforce to be stable over that. So there's a compromise somewhere in between the two. You definitely need the out-and-out grip to beat other people, but you need that out-and-out grip with consistency. And that's why the job's tough.
Well, thanks very much, Gary. Good overview of today's test and some of the patterns we have seen. Of course, we've got two more days. We'll have two more podcasts to come from the end of each day's running. And of course, if you head to therace.com and don't forget the hyphen, there's huge amounts to read on there, including some of the articles Gary's put together that were mentioned in this podcast. So please do subscribe, give us a review if you like it, and we'll be back tomorrow with more.